Good afternoon and welcome everyone to the Metro Access Subcommittee meeting today on Monday, May 16th, 2022. As you just heard, this meeting is being recorded. just a few helpful tips for people joining via phone call. You can press star six to mute or unmute yourself. If you would like to make comments, we would appreciate if you could raise your virtual hands by pressing star nine. If you press star nine again, that will lower your virtual hands. Everyone on the video conference, you can click on the speaker icon to mute or unmute yourself. If you go under reactions, click on the raise hand icon, that will raise or lower your virtual hands. All the participants are on mute. Unless speaking, please remain unmute. This helps eliminate any external noise, and we appreciate your cooperation in that. So thank you in advance. We do have ASL interpreters on this meeting with us. in order to help them doing their job well, please state your name before you start speaking. This helps them in doing their job. It also helps everyone on the phone call knowing who the speaker is at the moment. I would go ahead and read the meeting agenda for today. And afterwards, I would go ahead and take the roll call again, just for the record. For today's Metro Access Subcommittee meeting, the roll call is as follows. After I finish reading the meeting agenda, we'll go through the roll call again for the record. Afterwards, Chair Somerford will go through the motion of reviewing and approving the agenda and last month's meeting minutes. Afterwards, we would have customer service and commendations report, followed by Michael Wilson Award and the AAC Metro Access Safety Award. For the record, the Rush Awards have been postponed until the time we go back to in-person meeting. Metro Access face mask policy update would be provided by Mr. Blake. The next topic of discussion is Metro Access reservations and where is my ride agents? That is a discussion between Chair Semaford and Metro Access Management. The next topic of discussion is monthly Metro Access metrics and statistics. That would be a committee discussion with Metro Access Management, followed by a follow-up on focus groups quarterly presentation. That's a discussion initiated by Chair Semaford and Mr. Blake. Afterwards, we will have a topic update on shared rides with Metro Access. Mr. Blake is the presenter on that. The final topic of today's meeting is discussion of Metro Access customer guide to be presented by Allison Anderson, Mr. Blake, and Ms. Rush if she's on the meeting. Otherwise, I assume Mr. Chair Somerford will take over. At 5:30, we will have any public comments and the meeting is scheduled to adjourn at 6 p.m. That is the conclusion of today's agenda. For the record, I'll go ahead and take the roll call again and to ensure that any member who is present is marked. So, Darnese Bush.
Present.
Fino Calabia. Vanessa Coles. Rico Dancy, Deborah Fisher, Marcy Goldstein, Steve Caffin, he is on vacation, he informed the committee about that, Thomas Mangrum, Philippa Mazel.
Present.
Thank you. Phil Posner.
Still present.
Thank you. Doris Ray. Doris is connected on the call. Denise Rush. For the record, Ms. Rush has informed that she may be able to join a bit later or perhaps not. Paul Semaford.
Present.
Thank you. Patrick Sheehan. And Kelly Simonon. All right, that concludes the roster for today's meeting. At this point, Chair Summerford, I would ask for you to move the meeting forward. You have the floor.
Thank you. So we're going to go through the agenda here. We're probably going to make some adjustments since Ms. Rush is not here. So first thing is review of the agenda and the minutes from the prior meeting. With the agenda, I was going to move my amendment as is, that I a revision of the agenda, but I may hold off. Yes? Can you hear me?
I can hear you. Doc, just to let you know, Dr. Posner has his hand up.
Yes, Dr. Posner?
Yes, Mr. Chair. The board has appointed and he has accepted. Mr. Clark is the new general manager, CEO, but he will not be joining until late in the summer. The board has appointed an interim general manager since the current general manager will be stepping down at the end of May. So someone will be interim during June and possibly July or August. And the question I have is if Mr. Blake can update us as to what the plans are for who's going to be running the system.
Okay. We'll add that to the agenda here.
Thank you.
All right. So what I'm going to do is kind of swap out the discussion of the tracks guide with what Phil just stated. Since I really would like Ms. Rush to be here to represent that discussion, since it's she has some questions and concerns, and I would like her presence to be that. So given that I am substituting items, I would like to adopt this agenda as the substitute. Can I get a motion?
Okay.
Second, Darnie.
So bring it forward. Okay. All those in favor of accepting this agenda as modified, please do so, doing so by saying aye.
Aye. Okay.
Aye. Nays, abstentions, the motion carries to move this agenda. Next is the minutes from last month. Are there any questions about the minutes from the month of April? Any additions, subtractions? Anything that needs to be done? Hearing none, can I get a motion to move the minutes from last month from the Metro Access Subcommittee as is?
So moved.
All those in favor, please do so by saying aye.
Aye.
Nays, abstentions, the motion carries. To move
I wasn't here.
So let's make a note, one abstention. And the rest of it are our eyes. We're going to accept the minutes for April Metrax subcommittee meeting as is. All right, next we are going to move forward with customer service and recommendation reports. Ms. Anderson and her crew can give that.
Good afternoon, everyone. Again, my name is Allison Anderson with the Office of Metrax Service. At this time, I'd like to present Kay Clark, if she's on the line, to give the report on the public comment from our last session.
Good afternoon, everyone, and thank you, Ms. Anderson. There were no outstanding public comments to be addressed from the April meetings. However, I will be reporting the commendation totals for the month of April. Metro Access received a total of 312 in the month of April. And from each partner, I do have the breakdown for First Transit, 41, TransDev, 79, MV, 62, Challenger, 50, Next Transportation, 68, MTM, 2, Eligibility, 2, and lastly, Abilities Ride, 8. And this concludes my report.
Thank you so much.
Welcome.
We already did customer service and accommodations because, all right. Next will be the Michael Wilson Award and the Metro Access AAC Safety Award. Are there any recipients for this month?
Yes, we do. It is my pleasure to present Mr. Jamie Modlin. He is the general manager with TransDev. So Jamie, I'm turning it over to you.
Thank you, Allison. Good afternoon, everybody. Our Michael Wilson Award this month goes to Aminike Famakani. I'm sorry if I pronounced her last name wrong. Famkinwa, I think it is. She's a punctual, kind, helpful, generous, and respectful young lady. Her journey in transportation, let me give you a little background about her. She started in the industry in June of 2010. This is when she first was introduced to Metro Access in Hyattsville, Maryland. She was scrolling through the newspaper looking for an appointment at that time when she stumbled across an ad for bus drivers. She piqued her interest with the love for driving, exploring different avenues, and her passion is assisting others in need. She knew that she could provide quality, coordinated transportation and community services that would meet the needs of the people that we are entrusted to serve. She wanted to assist and create independence for disabled community. Almost 12 years later, she's still enjoying and loving what she does. So I guess you know how she stayed managed and focused in the field so long. She stays to herself, she tries not to complain, and she does the best job knowing that she could be one of the company's top ambassadors for TransDev. All these reasons are here that are out there. This is the reason she's still here. She's very grateful and for the opportunity that was afforded to her for the TransDev team. And her most accomplished reward as a professional operator vehicle operator. She feels that the job keeps her grounded, allows her to exercise compassion towards the community and be attentive to the needs of all her passengers. I think Miss Amnika is on the phone with us. If she could come onto the screen, that'd be great. Hold on, I'm getting that. Ms. Parker, can you put her up on the screen, please? Take you off and move, mute. Can you hear us? We can't hear you, Ms. Parker. There you go. Oh, that was somebody else. I'm sorry. Aminike, can you wave to us and say hey? I'm sorry, they're having technical difficulties there. But she is a part of the conference, the call today, and she so gratefully deserves what she got for the reward. She was trying to hold up a reward and show it to everybody.
Thank you. And we want to thank her for her outstanding service and all her contributions towards customers.
I appreciate that.
Okay, we're going to move on with our agenda here.
Mr. Semaford, I'm sorry.
Yes, ma'am.
Jamie, was there an AAC safety?
That's right. Oh, go ahead.
Yes, there was.
All right.
Yes, we took a different avenue this time. Instead of recognizing an operator, we recognized somebody who's been with us since 2013. Her name is Latid Thomas. She's been in the safety, she's been with the safety training division for us since 2003. She was raised in Washington, D.C., where she attended the DCPSS and graduated in 2003 from Luke Moore. She loves playing basketball, enjoys music during her school years. She's family oriented, and she enjoys taking family trips and especially spending time with her friends. She became a paratransit operator in 2013, and within a year, she was recognized as one of the top mentors in our mentoring program. With all her hard work and dedication as a mentor in 2016, she became a full-time trainer. Latia has shown great leadership and a true dedication towards the safety program. and she inspired many others in our training program, and she has earned the nickname Coach. Her ability to teach and interact with others is remarkable. I know this for a fact because I've spent some numerous times with her over the last month and a half, watching her work the operators lounge and keep continuing to provide safety messages and entertaining their responsibilities and adversaries as far as everything else that goes on. Ms. Thomas, would you like to say something?
Thank you, guys. Jamie, I appreciate you. Humble, grateful, and appreciative of the award. Put in a lot of years as far as work dedication. And I must say, I'm very, very appreciative of this opportunity. Thank you all for recognizing me and seeing my hard work. It goes a long way.
Keep up the good job.
All right.
For all your contributions. Thank you, Ms. Anderson.
Thank you. And thank you to all the recipients this afternoon. And we really do appreciate you and all you do for Metro Access customers.
All right. So, Mr. Blake, you're up next for the face mask policy. You probably can just recap what you said at the AAC, and we'll ask questions from there.
Okay, so where we are for certain this time, unlike at the last meeting, there is no mandatory face mask policy for Metro Access. However, through messaging, we are encouraging customers and drivers to wear a mask while using the service, as we're still in the time of pandemic. Although we're coming out of it, we're still encouraging people to wear masks, but there is no mask mandate per se for either customers or drivers.
Any questions for Mr. Blake on this topic here? I have two for him, so I'll go ahead first. So Mr. Blake, two things I've noticed. So yeah, I did my random checks of not wearing a mask. And like you discussed at the AAC, I guess initially within probably like the first week or so, some customers faced some resistance from drivers, not from keeping them off the van, but from telling them that they must wear a mask. That has pretty much, at least from where I've been riding myself as a customer riding, I have not had that issue.
Well, that's a good thing. You shouldn't be challenged, if you, for lack of a better word, by the drivers. The drivers are instructed to understand that there is no face mask mandate, but they should be wearing their mask and they should be practicing good ventilation. And now with the weather turning finally, the windows should be wide open, the AC or AC can be on. So the drivers should be focused on their jobs. And if there is anyone who feels challenged, if you will, beyond a simple one-time question at the most by a driver about their face mask situation, we should report that and we will address it.
So the next question comes, I think you're aware, because Metro Access does use occasionally Uber, either as an abilities ride trip or as a Metro Access trip.
Let's be clear. No trip on Uber is a Metro Access trip. So you should always understand that if you're using Uber, even if Metro is subsidizing it, you're using Uber service. So any customer who would have concerns or not like, that's why if your trip is running late and Metro Access either calls you or you call Where's My Ride and they offer it, you are granting them permission to put your trip on Uber. They can't just unilaterally do that.
Well, they've done it on a few occasions. I just see the text come up and I just accept it and keep moving. I'm just saying that. But most times they have called, 90% of the cases, there's been times I guess I just look at my cell phone and I see a text pop up for Uber. And this is usually sometimes with late night trips, so I'm not contesting it. it just like, oh, okay, I see that, you know, that's who's going to be my provider, you know, like 30 minutes before the window opens.
That's probably me trying to stop you from calling in a complaint. Oh.
So my next question is, well, my question with Uber is the fact that as it ties to this topic is, in certain localities, while they have relaxed the requirement, it says except where in localities where it's still required. So when I open up the Uber app for the DC area or New York, but particularly in the DC area, masks are still required. So how are you messaging that to customers? Because they need to know that in that specific instance, they have to wear a mask.
Okay, so in a case like that, because again, I'm not sure where DC is, the for hire vehicles has, you're right. So the customer has to be aware of the Uber policy or the taxi policy. You know, we're using either Uber or taxi. And if the customer is not aware of the policy, then the driver may say to them that, hey, we're in DC, and in DC, the requirement is that you have a mask on.
The only reason I know for Uber is for the fact when I open up my own personal Uber app, it says, you know, masks are still required. I'm in the DC area. So that tells me if there's a trip, obviously I have to. Obviously, there's no choice. I have to wear my mask because the driver can cancel the trip, you know, and, you know, that type of thing.
And no, you're right. The Department of For Hire Vehicles, shortly after Metro made its announcement, announced that they were maintaining a requirement for taxis and Ubers, which they regulate. So customers have to be aware. And again, if a customer is not immediately aware, if the driver brings it to their attention, then the customer is then on notice. But at that point, the customer has to utilize a mask because they are using the Uber or taxi service that's regulated by the District of Columbia, and they're not using a metro service.
Oh, okay. So final question. So going on that same topic, so for hired vehicles, that's for DC. Cabs, right? Right? Would that apply to also Virginia or, well, yeah, we're going to say Virginia because I had a Billy's Ride trip in, you know, Virginia. Mm-hmm. Or even Maryland. Because when you say for hire vehicles, is that, I guess I wanted to be clear, is that for the whole DC area region that people will be required to wear a mask, or it's just for taxis in the DC?
The District of Columbia Department of For Hire Vehicles only regulates taxis and Uber service in Washington, D.C. For Prince George's County, they have their own sort of taxi commission, same with Montgomery County, and the same with Virginia. I have not personally heard any announcements from any other local for hire type of regulatory body that a face mask is required for their services. I may have missed it. That doesn't mean they haven't made the announcements. I may have missed it, but I have not heard such the way I did hear from DC.
Okay. With that, is there any other questions from committee members about this topic here? Phil, anybody else?
Chair Summerford, this is, I do not see anyone's hands up at this point.
But one thing I would like you to do, and you know you're one of my chief researchers and reporters, if you will. I made a slight joke about, you know, trying to be proactive in stopping any complaints from you. But again, the use of Uber or in this case, Uber, if you ever get one before you've called Where's My Ride or before someone has called you and announce that your trip is likely to be late, would you like an Uber trip? If they've assigned this to you before you've given that particular consent, I need to hear about it. You just let me know so I can just research and get an understanding of how that occurs. Now, there are some customers, and we haven't put you, and you understand this, so I'm not giving out any secrets. You technically have not enrolled in Abilities Ride because as the chair of this committee, both it's in your interest and your due diligence to ride both Metro Access as well as the alternatives. So therefore, the computer isn't looking for your trips each day as it does other customers who've enrolled in. If you were a customer who had enrolled in, then the OCC can look and see that, hey, this customer's enrolled. So yes, we can place his or her trip on Uber because they've enrolled that they don't mind having one or more of their trips move. Now, in the defense of the OCC, I don't know, but that this is a defense for them, but it's still not the way it's supposed to work. Paul Semaphore has been placed on Uber dozens of times, quite to his satisfaction. Someone may have made the assumption, well, for this trip, we can place him on to avoid a late trip. I can see that happening, but that's not the way the process is supposed to play out. So if that happens, I do need to know about it.
The only reason I don't mind that. Obviously, you know, I'm getting picked up in my window. That's perfectly fine. But particularly with Uber sometimes, the reason I like to communicate to somebody when they offer that to me is A, to check the address, and B, particularly with Uber, the way it picks up is, you know, like a particular address, if I have the name of the location, it geocodes it better to the door. Like there was one evening they sent it to Uber, and the issue with that is they sent it to the correct address, but obviously it filed something like across the apartment building versus the location. If I gave them the name of the location matched with the address, then Uber gets to that location much more accurately instead of the driver, you know, calling me and finding me. It's like they gave me this address, but this is where the map took me to versus the name of the location along with the address. That's why I tend to use that on Uber, so they know where to precisely pick me up.
Understand. Yes, thank you.
That's just the point I'm making. That's all. So going on, go ahead.
Here's our report. Vanessa has her hand up.
Yep. Hi, Vanessa. And the next topic will be with you. Go ahead, Vanessa.
Hello, everyone. I'm sorry. For some reason, the computer won't let me respond. So I'm on my phone. Mm-hmm. But Mr. Blake, I just wanted to report kind of the opposite. For a couple of times when my trip, I wait till the window ends and I call OCC and they tell me, you know, my ride is like a mile away. So I asked for the supervisor, and the supervisor, I asked, you know, to take a look at it and if they could give my trip to an Uber. I've experienced the supervisor want me to still wait some more, because they may say, well, they're right there, or they're, you know, they're coming. And I've waited before 5 minutes, and it was still been late. Usually just during the time I'm going to the gym, so I don't want to waste my time waiting, because then I don't have the time that I need to do what I need to do. So I've experienced that on a couple occasions where they're asking me to wait yet a little bit more before they assign me an Uber.
And that's likely true as well. And they are using the computer and the GPS to estimate to their best extent. Again, I'm being in defense of the OCC in this case, is that they're probably in their mind saying, I know how long it's going to be before this van gets to you. And it's really not that long. It's right there. It's really, really right there. Whereas if we go ahead and put you on an Uber, it might be 20, 30 minutes. So I can, in their defense, I could say they're probably trying to err on the side of caution. Now, me personally, again, as a person who believes that we're trying to build an accommodating business, what I've said to the OCC is, if the trip is, because we don't want everybody just booking trips on Metro Access then calling in the OCC and say, oh, put my trip on Uber. It doesn't work that way. But what we've said that is, if your trip is projected to be late or is already late, then we should offer the customer an alternative. And if the customer in your case says, please send me an Uber, we should try to accommodate your wish if your trip is either late or projected to be late. Now, Were any of the trips you're speaking of that you waited and waited, again, well, I guess I'm answering my own question, did any of them eventually be late or were you still picked up on time?
Oh, I was not. By the time I call, it's past, it's my window. I
don't. Oh, that's what you said. You call after the pickup window.
No, I call at, my window is 1 to 1:30, so I call at 1:30.
Right.
And so that trip is late. I may start calling at 1:25, and they may tell me in advance what it looks like. And one time I waited, and the driver still didn't come to 1:35. So I was trying to help out and just be patient and wait. But I found that that's an estimate, like you said, but they have to consider it's DC, it's traffic, even though they see it's going to be, it's just a mile away or whatever, that mile may end up being 5 or 10 minutes. Mm-hmm. In my experience, I get Uber like in 5 to 7 minutes. They're usually right around in that area. So my Uber gets here sooner than my Metro Access trip.
And I believe that, and yes, and I heard you earlier, you said you called at the end of your window. So at the end of your window, if you call to check on the vehicle and then you made the request, I believe you should have been accommodated. And we'll reiterate that with the call center management team to just discuss that, because as you pointed out, because I know, obviously, I know where you are, and I'm kind of familiar with that area. And you're right. There are dozens of private vehicles as well as taxi vehicles in your area. And if a Metro Access van is already running late, 9 out of 10 times, a third party provider will be able to pick you up quicker than that Metro Access van or sedan. So I will reiterate that, though. End of the window, trip is already late. If the customer requests the accommodation of a third party, we should grant that customer. That's my position, and we, you know, that's what I strongly encourage the OCC to do.
Okay, thank you.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, Philippa, go ahead, please.
Hi, I just wanted to say that the times when I do use Metro Access and then I call Mr. Blake, I do it properly and he moves me to an Uber. The Uber is typically very much on time. That is not my concern in general. My concern is that I'm in a very popular part of town. I'm on 12th Street between U Street and V Street Northwest, but the Uber always goes to Ben's Chili Bowl. And no matter, you know, sometimes I can course correct them and other times they give up in frustration. All they have to do really is take a U-turn and take the first left and they'd be at my building. But so I just didn't know if there's any way to address that they're constantly sending them to the wrong address with this particular address. Now, if people know the city, they know where to go. But those who don't know the city are just confused, lost and confused, you know.
Well, what I will say, Philippa, because I can probably answer some of it, Mr. Blake will answer some also, is because I do write Uber privately, is even when you put in particular addresses, and this requires someone who's sighted, you really have to look careful for the address you put down as to where Uber picks up for that address. So it might be different than the exact, you may put in the correct address, but Uber might decide to pick up somewhere nearby for whatever variety of reasons. That's why you have to look at it very carefully. That's why I stated previously, you know, if I give the name of a specific location or a building name and it's an Uber, it will pick up at, you know, more accurately at that, you know, specified location, if that makes sense. Now I'm going to give this back to Mr. Blake.
So you're saying give them the name of my condo building.
Yeah, because if you put it certain names of condo buildings, it will have it there. And then, you know, afterwards, the street address, if it shows up, then highly likely it will pick you up there right at that spot. I found it to be more accurate than sometimes the street at, you know, the regular address, only because, you know, names or locations, it geocodes it much better.
Okay, because yes, Ben's is like a block and a half away. It's not like it's really, really close. It's close, but it's not close enough that I want to walk around the corner and down the street.
Yeah, so that may be Uber. That may be part of the issue, but I'm going to let Mr. Blake give his cents.
Yes, Mr. Blake.
It's actually an Uber issue. Uber never goes to the address. What they do is they pick the location they like nearest to the address, and it's up to you to walk to the Uber. That's just the way Uber does it. I have never had an Uber show up where I have asked for it, be it at a hotel in another city, be it at my home in Virginia, be it in Washington, D.C. It's always a hunt. And so they will contact me and say, we are here, where are you? And I will say, I am here, where are you? And then they'll tell me where they are. And it's usually around the corner at a restaurant. And so that's why they're going to Ben's Chili Bowl. And that's one of the problems with Uber. Lyft is a lot better.
But but they never seem to have a problem when the location that I go to, they don't have a problem getting to the other location. And if I'm in the car and they're bringing me home, of course, I can direct them. But it just seems something is going.
They're picking you up the first time. It's always you've got to guess where they are.
All right.
Visually impaired, I can't walk around the corner and figure out which car is my Uber.
I understand. And then have, on my case, they've often billed me for being late to the pickup, and then I explain that I'm old and I can't run.
All right, so I'm going to leave this.
Feel it, and they give me the extra money back. So,
in interest of time, I'm going to give this back to Mr. Blake for final comments.
So comment, and what Philippa's talking about is a serious and important issue. And one of the things I'm seeing it more and more as I look at the daily trip list. We're encouraging customers to use those pickup and drop off comments to provide more details about both the pickup and drop off locations. We're not asking you to put a book or a dissertation in the comments section, but to add more commentary, because I'll be honest with you, that not only benefits when the trip gets moved to an Uber or a taxi, it really benefits the Metro Access drivers as well. So everybody's using different GPS systems, different ways of getting their drivers to and from a location. No one system is going to be perfect. No one system, we don't have the control, when I say we Metro, to have all of the companies use the same software that will get everybody right to where they want to be picked up. So I'm just asking, yes, customers, over time, begin using more and more of that pickup and drop-off comment when you're reserving trips. And that information is provided to whoever is coming to pick you up, be it Metro Access or a third-party provider.
Thank you. And on that, we need to move on.
Thomas has his hand up. Did you want to take his hand?
Thomas, you're the last person that we must move on.
Okay. My thing is this. If you pick up somebody in Maryland and they come to D.C. on Metro Access, D.C. says you have to use a mask, right? No. So, can the dispatchers from reservationists let people know when they're making a reservation that they're coming into D.C., they have to wear the mask or whatnot? Because, they might not have to wear it in Maryland, but D.C. says you do. And I could see an argument starting with the driver and the passenger if nobody tells them that. And especially if Metro Access pick up somebody in D.C. and a person in D.C. is nervous about being on a ride with somebody that's not wearing the mask. So how is y'all going to address that?
Let Mr. Blake answer it.
Yeah, that's a good question, but let's be very clear for everyone. If a Metro Access vehicle picks up a customer in Maryland or Virginia and brings them to DC, at no point on that trip is the customer required to have a mask on or the driver? If a customer, what we were talking about earlier, is that the District of Columbia for hire vehicles are requiring masks on Uber and taxis. Now the question becomes, that is a fair question. If somebody's picked up in a taxi in Maryland or a taxi in Virginia, and they're brought to work in DC or school, whatever the purpose, they would be brought to DC, do they have to put on a mask en route or once they get in? We're gonna let the third party companies handle that communication with the customers. But if you're in a Metro Access vehicle, whether you're picked up in DC or brought to DC, there is no mask mandate for the driver or customer.
Thank you, Mr. Mangrum. We must move on. Thank you for this wonderful, rich discussion. If we need to bring it back in the future, we'll be more than happy to do that. So the next one, I'm going to need Vanessa for this. You'll be the first up because I brought this topic because the director said by this meeting, she would bring back a response with your concerns with Where's My Ride agents in terms of reservations when you were making and having some, experiencing some challenges. I'm going to let, management respond to that.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
So Mr. Blake or
Can you help me? Because I saw
so,
you.
What happened was the director last time, when Vanessa had her concerns about making some reservations, about hearing things in the background, and the director said this should not be happening with them working from home. I know there was follow-up with Vanessa, and that also the director said she'd be bringing back, what was happening with that.
Thanks for the reminder. Yeah, you're talking about, so somebody calls Where's My Ride, or they call for a reservation. We have some OCC team members working from home, and when you call, you hear Jay-Z and Beyonce in the background, which is totally unprofessional.
Or they tell us that, we don't know how to, transfer the call to a supervisor because I'm working from home, which I got once.
Right.
That type of thing.
Or like when you call me, it's country. So let's go. Say that one more time, Vanessa.
It wasn't that. It wasn't that bad. It was static when I was calling. It wasn't about hearing a dog bark or the baby cry. It was about some static in the line. It was very difficult and echoing. I kept hearing myself being echoed. And then the other situation, it's the same call. The individual had to wait and get permission from the supervisor for her to transfer my call, so I had to wait. And then when she finally came back and transferred me, the supervisor never picked up. So that was kind of what my situation was.
I got you, and I appreciate that. And there's been discussions with our contractor about the work from home expectations we have. We appreciate the idea. We recognize the new world, but I know there's been some work being done between Ms. Williams Hall and Ms. Ridgeway. So I'm going to turn it over to the two of them to address perhaps your concern in particular, but the general discussion we've had about improving the performance of our team members who are working remote or when they work remote.
Right. So thank you so much, Mr. Blake. This is Terrian Williams Hall, Director for Metro Access. And thank you, AAC subcommittee members, for the opportunity to address this again. Absolutely, your experience, Ms. Coles, is not one that we anticipated, but could be expected to some degree with regard, especially to call quality. So that has prompted us to look at the quality of the headphones that we are using on remote work. They worked well in the office setting. Don't know if the fact that these are now, working across the internet, if there is some minimization of functionality. So we're looking at that from that perspective. We definitely took a hard look at the transfer procedures because before we began working at home, the agents could just literally turn around, tap a supervisor, stand up, get someone's attention, because we all were working very closely in the call center. A lot different to do when you're working in a remote environment. We thought we had a procedure in place that was working without fail, but some additional follow-up and questions presented an opportunity for us to modify that procedure. And we've worked on that diligently over the course of the last month. We're doing some technical things to improve that so that you will not experience that kind of delay. And rather than take away from what I'm sure Ms. Ridgway is going to share with you, I'll transition to her. But I do want you to know that we heard all of the concerns. And again, we encourage you to continue to bring them. And we do have a plan in place to address each one. Ms. Ridgway, over to you.
Thank you, Ms. Williams-Hall, and thank you, subcommittee members and Mr. Blake. So yes, Ms. Cole, so what we've done, we investigated all of your concerns with regards to the call quality, as Ms. Williams-Hall had mentioned. Specifically, I think it was the static. So we have been testing out three different versions of headsets that we're using. So just to see, you know, what would be the best product to improve our call quality. So we are in the process of doing that. We also, as Ms. Williams-Hall had mentioned, we've been working very closely in our partnership with her team with regards to readdressing our proper call transferring procedures, which includes when a customer asks for specifically for a supervisor. So we have put together some new procedures with regards to that, and we look forward to improving that process for you as well.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
I will say to you, Ms. Williams-Hall, when you said the call echoing, I mean, I've heard it a few times, but it has been, I have not heard it lately. So whatever you're doing right now, keep doing it.
Thank you so much for that feedback, Mr. Summerford.
Because I thought I was crazy when I'm calling, why am I hearing this echoing? And I have to keep repeating myself to be heard.
Right. One of the things that you might have experienced is that the entire work group has returned back to the office several days a week. So no one is working 100% remotely anymore. Each one of the team members, I think they work a 60-40 split or somewhere thereabouts right now. So the bulk of their time is in the office, but they do still continue to work a few days a week remotely.
Okay. And I know it's a work in progress, but we want to have a good, you know, interaction experience and be able to hear, communicate things, which is obviously very critical. And, you know, call quality is, you know, essential for that.
It is. Thank you again for the opportunity. I assure you, Ms. Anderson, Ms. Ridgway, myself and her team, we're working very hard to improve your customer service experience.
All right, thank you. And hold on, Ms. Terrianne Williams-Hall, for the next topic, because I may need you for it. I think I was going to gear it towards you. So with the monthly statistics, one of the things I was going to ask for, because one of the things I've been experiencing, I remember a while ago, correct me if I'm wrong, what y'all tried to have no more than, if possible, during non-peak times, or for the most part, is when a customer calls in to, like, where's my ride or reservations, the two main call-in areas, is the wait time to be, on average, no more than possibly 2 minutes. And that has been good for the most part, but there's been some instances I've, like, noticed maybe in later in the evening at night, or we definitely know during that, you know, in time for reservations close to 4:30, maybe the hour before, yes, there's going to be more wait time because everyone's trying to call in for a trip before the next day. I wanted to get a sort of metric, if it's possible, you know, on the average call-in times, because I know we discussed it in the past that we gotta look for an average of 2 minutes, but is 5 minutes kind of pushing it if it's like during a maybe a non-peak peak time or that type of thing when you call into any of those two functions?
So our KPI is that the overwhelming majority of our calls are answered within 2 minutes. I think it's 90%. Is that about right, Ms. Anderson? Is it 90% are answered within 2 minutes? Is that the telephone response time?
Actually, it's a little higher than that, 95%.
Okay, so 95%. So as I mentioned, our overwhelming majority of calls should be answered within 2 minutes. 2 minutes is a when you think about call center operations, that's very, very generous. I will tell you, that's a generous amount of time. However, we have experienced some an uptick in absences lately that is probably contributing to the extended delays that you just mentioned. I want to be clear, though, we don't change our KPI or performance expectation to meet staffing. It still remains 95% of the calls should be answered within 2 minutes. It's just that there are times when we miss the target. That is something that I've also been working very closely with Ms. Ridgeway and her team on. They have some aggressive things that they're implementing now to help ensure that their attendance is not going to be an issue for us. So I believe that although we experienced a dip over the past few weeks, that you're going to see a different response going forward. But do understand that we don't change the metric, nor do we expect it to dip because of any other issues. At all times, the expectation is that 95% of the calls are answered within 2 minutes.
Again, I'm not harping on like that, you know, where I notice heavy peak times. Mm-hmm. But when I said nighttime, I'm like, I'm calling and I notice not that many people is riding at night and we're still with low ridership. Why am I getting an average of 5-7 minutes in the late evening? I'm not talking about in the middle of the day before.
Right, 4:30. Absolutely. Yeah.
I'm excluding that. I understand that everyone's calling in. It's rush hour. Everyone wants to get their ride. But late in the evening, I'm like, why is this happening? So I wanted to see if on our report, maybe Mr. Blake, is there any way we can get that as a new metric for our statistics?
So that's currently included, Mr. Semaford. Are you asking for something different?
Where would that be for
on you the see it under telephone response time?
Oh, there is? Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh. So there's a metric for telephone response time.
Yes, there always has been. I don't know that we've ever paid a lot. You know, people may not be paying a lot of attention to it, but it's there. And it's always been that 95%.
Easy pay, trips canceled, automated processes, missed trips. Okay, maybe I'm blind. Y'all will have to point it out to me. So I'm looking at this 7 pages here of the current one, performance outcome safety.
I don't have that in front of me. Mr. Blake, do you have that available to you?
Because I don't, okay, maybe I'm blind, but I don't see telephone response time.
I'm not sure if we actually put that in the AAC report.
Okay, okay. Yeah,
we will add it to the AAC report.
Okay. Yes.
All right. So I'm making a request then. Okay. I don't have to make a motion, but a request if staff can add that to the for the Metro Access Subcommittee subcommittee performance report.
Okay. Then since I wasn't aware that it wasn't on your version of the report, so we can certainly add.
Because I know we discussed this verbally, but I've never seen it on paper.
Okay, we will add that.
And I also noticed the improvement also of no, it's under target, below the target for missed trips. So that's a good one. I do want to compliment y'all for that.
Very good.
So whatever y'all doing, that's good. I know y'all still diligently working on the late trips, like Mr. Blake and you have been discussing to minimize that. So I see that's getting a lot lower and lower each month. So I do want to give y'all kudos for that.
Thank you so very much.
You know, and every other customer that appreciates having that. Any other discussion from the committee member or anything else as it relates to the performance report?
Chair Samuelford, this is Senator Doris has raised her hand up. Doris, go ahead.
Go ahead, Doris.
Yes, I just wanted to clarify. I recall that telephone response time is an ADA performance standard. So obviously we should be tracking it. Why do I want to say something about 30 seconds, 1 minute? Can you enlighten me about that?
I can. If that question is directed towards me, Ms. Ray, 30 seconds sounds familiar to you because that's the industry standard. That typically in most call center environments, 90% of calls are answered within 30 seconds. And you heard me reference the fact that ours is quite generous.
If it's 2 minutes versus 30 seconds?
Yeah. Now, I'm not trying to absolve myself of any responsibility at all. I'm a part of this team. But that metric was in place and in the contract well before I joined the team. And that was specific to this contract. But with almost any other call center that you will ever interact with, the expectation is that 90% or more of their calls are answered within 30 seconds. The contractual requirement here is 95% are answered within 2 minutes.
Okay, but what I was saying is there is actually in the ADA race.
Actually, I did not. I'll double check. You know, I don't call myself an expert or anything. I always give that myself some wiggle room, but I do not believe there is a specific telephone response metric in the ADA. I think the telephone or the response is based on being able to schedule a reservation, but it does not give a metric as to how fast you have to answer a phone call for a paratransit.
I was almost sure there was, because it was an issue before ADA paratransit was established. So I appreciate your research.
Okay. I'm looking at Part 37, subpart F right now, Title 49. I will double check throughout the meeting. I don't see it, but I'll look some other places where it could be, but I don't see it in the language at the moment.
This is
I've never seen that. Oh, believe me, if I was aware of that, believe me, we would have it established as our metric, believe me. But again, I'm not an expert. I always give myself some wiggle room. So I'll look again and make sure.
All right, dude. Was there another person that had their hand up?
Yes, Nicole Ridgway, I think, wants to add something to that discussion. And then Darnese Bush has raised her hand.
Okay, so go ahead,
Nicole.
Yes, thank you very much. So I've actually was the project manager for MTA Mobility. So that, as Ms. Williams-Hall said, yes, 2 minutes is an ample time for our industry compared to other call centers across the country. However, the 2 minute call response tends to be the standard for the paratransit industry for the operations control centers, having that experience both here at WMATA and also for MTA Mobility.
And I will also add, in her defense, me who use New York City, where there's a lot more people calling in 24/7, that's very generous. I will say that, because you know, I may get sometimes at minimum 5 minutes. For us to get it down to two for the most part is actually awesome.
Darnese, go ahead, please.
Okay. In terms of the 2 minutes, I think that's generous too, because when I call in, it's not really 2 minutes. I thought it was 2 minutes before the phone was answered and the recording went on. Because usually by the time a person actually comes on the phone, I would get in more than 2 minutes. And I've called all different times. I've called when you first open in the morning. It's much later in the evening. And I try not to call at that time because it's extremely busy between 3 and 4:30.
So you're talking about reservations, or where's my ride? Because you know, reservations is open from what is it, 8 a.m. to 4:30, and then Where's My Ride is 24/7.
Yeah, no, this is for reservations.
Oh, okay.
Call Where's My Ride. Well, when I call them Where's My Ride, they're pretty quick. I would give them the 2 minutes. But I have a problem with Where's My Ride, because unless your time is up, they really don't want to look at it. And then, like say, you're supposed to call in between 11 and 11:30. Say I call in at 11:27. Well, the time is going to tick away anyway while I'm talking to them, and then they'll look for the ride. But if I called in at 11:20, then they say, your ride will be there in 10 minutes. And I get a lot of calls about this 10 minutes, and then I start calling back every 15 minutes. So I have a complaint when we get to the complaint section.
Okay, but just do understand that there is a policy with Metro Access, and you're going to express it, and staff will answer at that point that customers are not to call until the window has passed. And I'm going to leave that as that as we move on. Next, we have time for everybody. Next is, and thank you, Ms. Williams Hall and Mr. Blake for the clarifications. Next, we're going to move on with follow up on focus groups quarterly presentation. So, Mr. Blake, when can we start seeing some presentations from your wonderful Metro staff like we did years ago?
Now, okay, on this one again, help me remember what kind of presentation are you looking for?
Yeah, I'll still do these quarterly, surveys with customers and things like that. And what has happened in the past? Yeah, we would like to see that again.
Right. No, I remember now. Okay, so I have the data for the last quarter, so I'm going to put that on the agenda next month.
Okay.
I mean, but just so we're clear on what your expectations should be, I'm going to be providing a summary of the customer satisfaction survey. And right now, for example, I can tell you the last quarter, the customer satisfaction measure was 85%. But then I'll give you more details about some of the information the researchers gathered. Are you expecting more than that, I should ask?
What we got in the past was, this was what the survey's about. This is what the customers gave as responses. So we kind of have an idea what the pulse of, obviously I'll use the data to, either follow up on, whatever practices that need to be, improved or, things that worked. But it also gives us an idea every quarter, what the pulse of the customers are, where their understanding is of things. And that helps even guide us with, topics also where there might be possible concerns.
Okay, I think we've got it.
That's why we find it very useful when we had it in the past.
Not a problem. We'll give a presentation next month at the MAS meeting, the Metro Access Subcommittee, and then we'll go from there.
Okay. Yes. Because I remember in the past it was done by, I guess, the marketing group or whatever, but if you give it, it's totally fine too. So shared rides, since we have you up for next, what's the status on that? We just like those little brief ones. We understand right now you're using a strategy and everything else, but let me let you give your spiel.
Right. So for the month of April, there were 6.58% of trips on Metro Access were shared rides, which I still maintain is probably one of the lowest in the nation at this point in time. I could be wrong on that, but among the big cities.
I will agree with you on that one. Yes.
So yeah, among the big cities, I'm sure we're the lowest in terms of shared rides. We're being very, very generous with safety in mind to our customers. Last week, the number of shared rides were 6.98%. And the week before that, they were 7.5%. So we'll probably stay in this sub double digit range probably for the next few weeks. But I will tell you, probably July 1st, as we're trying to bring back things to normal. We want to bring customers back in for their assessments. We want to get travel training up and running. We want to be normal, but we're not going to be just reckless about it. We're going to continue to have safety of our customers and drivers at the forefront, but we're probably going to begin to increase the shared rides moving forward, beginning July 1st. I'll let you know for sure by the next Metro Access Subcommittee meeting. And what that may mean is the first thing we'll probably do is move away from the vehicle capacity constraint, meaning we won't leave the maximum number of individual passengers to 3, and we will allow shared rides on the sedans, but we may still continue to schedule the trips the way we're doing now, but that will still naturally increase shared rides as demand increases. And as demand begins to go up, then the number of shared rides are going to increase over time. So before we just start scheduling a whole lot of shared rides, we're probably going to just start with the vehicle capacity and allow the extra demand to naturally build up to the shared ride numbers.
So here's my question on that. Not to the Metro Access vehicle, but the sedan. So will that mean that the driver will have to now share that front seat next to him?
Probably not July 1st. So okay,
I'm just asking that question.
Yeah. We'll get to that. Sorry. We'll get to that shortly. What we're going to probably start with is we will allow a customer traveling with a PCA or 2 separate Metro Access customers to use a sedan. And then we will begin to go to that final step in the sedan at allowing the front seat. But that's going to be a little later. We haven't gone that far out of the pandemic just yet. But once there are more signals that the pandemic is quote unquote over as a pandemic, I mean, I think some of this is probably with us forever, but as a pandemic, once that is over, then that front seat will likely become available for another passenger.
All right, and in the future, as this progresses, would there be flexibility if there's, you know, some godforsaken winter uptick for y'all to make adjustments?
We're always prepared to make adjustments, absolutely.
As we've seen with these last 2 winters, you know, major upticks in cases that just required some adjustments, we shall say.
Yes, we're always prepared, and thank goodness we have abilities, right? So we have a lot more flexibility than we had in the past to make things accommodate for safety and other reasons.
All right. Any other committee members have questions on this topic?
Chair Summerford, I do not see anyone else's hand up at this time.
Okay, so next, Phil, you can go ahead.
With your spiel and presentation with Mr. Blake, go ahead, Phil.
Yes, good evening. It's just a question, since there is going to be a transitional phase with the new GM, he was quite forthcoming at his press conference about wanting to learn the system, meet with all the stakeholders, meet with all the employees, meet with all of the subdivisions. And while I think that's a wonderful thing to do, the feeling I had was physically, he probably will not arrive in the DC area until sometime mid to late July, possibly August, because he is finishing up in his current location. And then if he takes 1 to 2 months, particularly August when nobody meets, to get around, there has been an interim CEO GM appointed. He currently is focusing primarily on the Silver Line Phase 2, but no word was given as to all of the other directors. Thinking of Mr. Leader as operations director, thinking of our safety director, think of our public relations director. And the question is, who's in charge of whom? Because we will be going through to the new budget year on July the 1st, and it has been approved to continue what we're currently doing with Metro Access and with the flat fares on the weekends, et cetera, et cetera. And so for Mr. Blake, I am certain there have been some internal, well, I'm not certain, but I would hope there have been some internal discussions as to who's running what. Will Mr. Leader still be running general operations? You're reporting to him and you running Metro Access and accessibility. Will our current safety chief be continuing to run safety and reporting to the interim general manager? The interim general manager is the person that was working on phase two of the Silver Line. So those are the questions. In other words, who's steering the ship?
That's a very fair question. And we do have now an interim CEO and general manager, and that is Mr. Andy Off, who's working hand in hand with our current CEO and GM, Mr. Paul Wiedefeld, in a transition as Mr. Wiedefeld begins to exit for his retirement. And there's a time period between the arrival of Mr. Clark. Mr. Andy Off, as you pointed out, has been working on the Silver Line Phase 2. A couple of people have been appointed to step in his shoes on that project while he's serving as interim GM. In all of your other understandings, as you articulated in terms of the protocol and hierarchy of the authority, remains in place. Mr. Leader will report to Mr. Off. I report directly to Mr. Leader, and I try to get everybody else to report to me. But I have my team, and we're doing what we do. So at this moment, I would take the attitude that nothing changes. You continue to advocate and advise. I got to be careful with that. You advise the board. Your direction, your direct communication with the board does not change. I don't know if you've met Mr. Off over the years, if you have a relationship with him, but the same way you have reached out to others in your capacity as the chairman of the AAC, I'm sure he would welcome that as well. And of course, we've already discussed your desire to use the your report to invite not only Mr. Off now, but also the new GM and board members to AAC meetings. And once there is a signal from there, my team will facilitate those appearances. So nothing changes. Let's just start it with that, with nothing changes until something changes. How about we do it that way? I think that's the easiest way to approach it. But the things you're gonna be advising on as it relates to the budget should not change. I mean, you continue to do what you've been doing and the channels that you've been doing them through.
Thank you. You've noticed I've added a little fungus to my face so I can look like Mr. Leader and talk and discuss things. But with what's currently going on with the shortage of rail drivers, with the shortage of rail cars, thinking this might be a time to try a pilot of fixed fare all the time over the summer for Metro Access. And I, once again, hesitate to make a suggestion, but you know, it has to be something that's affordable, something that's sustainable. And you know, I have given the range of anything between zero and $4.75, which is the average.
Now, Phil, you already know, and I know Mr. Blake might begin to say, if you look at our monthly statistics report, about almost 70% of the customers are now paying the flat fare on average. Only 30% are paying any fares beyond four between $4, above $4 and at $6.50.
Yes, they may be doing that, but it's not official. They still don't know what they're paying.
Okay. I'm just saying.
Faded. And so that's the point.
And I hear you, Dr. Phil, and I always say, advocate, do what you want. But as you pointed out, Paul, again, my phone number, and I know earlier Philippa said, hey, she follows the rules and calls me to move a trip. And I just want y'all to know that's not the rules. You're supposed to be calling OCC, so I don't want everybody calling me. But no, I don't mind it. But here's what happens, though. I talk to dozens of customers, usually on a daily basis, usually hundreds during any given month or week. And over time, what we did hear, and what I've certainly heard loud and clear, is that in this region, more than anything else, customers by and large want fare reduction. So you can either change the fare officially, as you say, Dr. Posner, because it's not official. You can either change the fare officially, or you can implement policies and advocate for things that result in the actual that people really want. And so as a team, the AAC continue to advise and advocate on my end. The actual results are starting, if you look every month at that report, you're seeing the average fare. And I'm happy to see that those numbers are coming down. And those numbers, keep in mind, only reflect trips on Metro Access. They're not even reflecting the nearly 500,000 we've already placed on Abilities Ride so far this year that are absolutely free of charge. So I think your continued advice to the board and advocacy in general in the work of the team, we're going to continue to follow this path and bring fare relief to the customers while providing quality, safe paratransit service at the same time.
Thank you so much. And I hate to go back on what I once said to your predecessor. And right now, what I really would like to see, and what I've heard from the rest of the group, is an understandable fare. And, you know, while we all would like something less, but understandable is important. And if it's okay with you, and I will call you and see if you'd be willing to talk to Mr. Leader about that. And I will be happy to contact Mr. Leader and we can have a growth discussion and say that we have requested that you speak with him about what the current fares are as far as numbers go. And that this time period when there are few drivers for the rail, there's a shortage of buses, there's a shortage of trains, that can we experiment with a flat fare for 2 months and see whether those numbers would be sustainable and reasonable so that when the new GM CEO comes on for real in September, it's a policy that could be discussed. So what we're basically asking for is a policy. And I'm not asking you to do it on your own. I'm happy to talk to you and say, I'm asking you to do that. And I'm happy to talk to Mr. Leader.
Give me a call and we could talk.
Brooklyn to the Bronx.
And yes, please give me a call.
Mr. Blake would love to talk to you. Yeah, because we've asked him to.
I usually do that to Terry, and I always put her in the fire like that, but I'm not. But just give me a call and I'll give you the latest and greatest on the flat fare.
No, that's terrific. Because that's more important than the number. Just understanding how much money you need in your pocket. Just like how much mask you need in your pocket. So yeah, that's terrific. And we're all smiling when we do this.
I understand. Yeah.
All right, next I'm gonna go on to public comment, but I wanted here, to see.
7-4, this is Anu.
Yeah.
Two people have their hands up, Philippa and Thomas Mangrum. Now Vanessa also.
All right, is this something we are gonna use for public comment or does it relate to the topic at hand that we're discussing?
Topic.
Okay. Go ahead, Philippa.
This is me, Philippa. Philippa, I just want to make a quick comment that I did not mean to suggest that I'm calling Mr. Blake directly for Ubers. I do book my trip with Metro Access and then it gets moved to an Uber. So I just wanted to clarify that in case I left the wrong impression.
Oh, okay.
Thank you.
All right, next person.
Thomas, go ahead.
Yes.
My thing is, with the new person that comes on in September, is it possible that we could ask them to maybe come to the group, our advisory group, and talk to us and let us know about some of the things that he wants to do when he comes on? I think that'd be nice for us to have him at least in one of the meetings with us to talk to us. That's
now,
all.
Now, Thomas, are you talking about, because Phil already made a request for him to show up at an AAC meeting. Are you requesting that he comes to a Metro Access subcommittee meeting?
Any meeting.
Okay.
Any meeting that we might have with the advisory group. I didn't know y'all already done requesting him to come to the meeting.
Yeah, that's a good thing. Made a request. Yeah, he already made that. Phil has already made that request to come to an AAC meeting. That's what I wanted to clarify if you wanted it additionally. Okay, thank you.
Yeah, yes, Thomas, this is Phil Posner, and I will request that Mr. Wiedefeld come to our meeting so we can say goodbye and thank him for all he has done for us during his term in the system, and then request that our new GM CEO and Mr. Smedberg, chairman of the board, come to talk to us so that sometime in June, July, and September, I would hope that we would get to meet the outgoing CEO, the chairman of the board, the interim CEO, and the new CEO. So that come September, when we start our new year, everybody knows where we are and what we're doing, and we set our work plan for the year. So great suggestion, and hopefully we'll be able to do all of that.
Vanessa, go.
Okay, thank you. So my question is kind of follow-up from Monday for Mr. Blake. Is there any information I could provide the consumer regarding the new building location? And my second FYI is, I'm understanding that the truckers are coming back and they're not going to be on the outskirts. They're coming back into the city. So that may affect, us getting around in the city. I'm not sure when they're coming, but my understanding is that they are coming back.
Okay, thank you for that heads up, because I have not heard about the truckers returning to the DC region, but this is a region that is used to protests or demonstrations, a better word, demonstrations, although some are larger and can be more disruptive than others. We'll keep a lookout for it, but as with all things, we make adjustments and we utilize all of the resources that we have available throughout the region to try to minimize the impact on customers like yourself. But we'll keep a lookout for that, and we'll provide updates through the committee as well as our other means of communication to the customers as to what to expect should there be demonstrations by any group of people whose demonstrations could potentially disrupt our service in any way. As far as the new building, let's save that for perhaps the AAC meeting, definitely no later than the next Metro Access Subcommittee meeting, because as I stated earlier, we're starting to prepare to bring customers in for in-person assessments and interviews again. We're ready to begin travel training again soon. So as we get closer to that, we will obviously be providing you with details about the location into and from there by Metro, as well as what to expect when being picked up or dropped off by Metro Access or a third party provider.
Okay, thank you.
Start for a public comment, Mr. Blake, because I want to get your team prepared for next month. I want to get some kind of indication from y'all, if y'all have any information, an update on Metro Access preparations for when the Silver Line opens. How are y'all doing that with the expansion of the service area and things like that, and getting drivers and all that? I just put that bug out there.
that's a very fair question. And I like to believe, I want to say we are prepared. As always, I like to think we're a very well planned out service. There are challenges at times with drivers and things like that. But yes, we will be prepared as soon as the service is available. And again, we will be utilizing Metro Access vehicles, but we also will be using some of the abilities ride providers for customers who have enrolled in the program. And the service should, despite the location, other than the difference in the geography of where you're traveling, the Metro Access service should not be any different in terms of your experience as a customer.
So for online booking, I should find that, you know, once y'all expand the map, it'll have the ability to do that in the with any addresses that are within the 3/4 of a mile near those two new train stops in particular, or at Dulles Airport, or, you know, where those things are going to be. Okay.
I want to say, I thought it was 4 new stops, but let me double check.
Well, it's 4 new stops, but one in Reston Town Center that's still within Fairfax County. 2 are in Herndon, that's within Fairfax County. So it's actually 3. The one at the airport, which would be technically obviously expansion, and then the 2 out in Loudoun County that will be expanding.
Yes. And can I just take a moment before you go to your next speaker and public comment? Because you mentioned online booking, and I did want to bring up, that reminded me to bring up one thing. As you know, we're trying, and I'm not going to promise a new improvement every month, so let's not go there, but I am trying to bring up improvements each and every month that I can, or more. And our team did find a way, and this was a recommendation by one of the advocates. I could say his name. People deserve credit. This was from Ansel Torres, is that the online booking link was difficult to find, and recommended that we make it a more prominent feature on the page. Now, his recommendation was that we place it on the homepage of WMATA. Well, we didn't do that, but on the homepage of WMATA, there is a Metro Access link. And when you land on the Metro Access link page, right beneath Metro Access is now a link for the online booking. And so you're literally 2 clicks away from online booking, whereas before you were several clicks away from online booking. And as I tried it myself, yes, it could be a challenge getting to that online booking link, but working with our IT team, we have made that now a 2-click process for accessing the online web booking for Metro Access. Not on the front page, maybe one day it may be, but we've made it certainly a lot more accessible and easy to use for all of our customers. So we appreciate the recommendation. We do follow up, and we're going to continue, even though we have a website where the independent software, don't shoot the messenger, but the independent software says it's 93% accessible. But even with those independent software measures, we know that there's always ways we can improve the website usability, if not simply just the accessibility. We're going to continue to do that. And as you and other customers and advocates have recommendations for website improvements, please share them with us, and we'll try our very best to implement.
All right, thank you. With that, do we have people for public comment? I know some AAC members want to speak, but I want to get those who are, you know, have signed up who are not AAC members first before the AAC members.
Yes. So we have Ansel Torres who would like to make comments. And then I see Doris Ray and then Darnice Bush. So Mr. Torres, go ahead. And when you start speaking, before you begin, I just want to remind everyone, all the people who would be making public comments, you would be allotted 3 minutes. I would try to find a time to alert you approximately 30 seconds before the 3 minutes end. And then at the 3 minutes, you would hear a sound alerting you that your time has expired. This is just to make sure that anyone who would like to make some comments gets the opportunity. If we have any remaining time, and you have any more comments, we can definitely come back to you. So when you start speaking, Mr. Torres, that is when I'll start the timer. Thank you. Go ahead, please.
Hello, Good afternoon, everyone. I first want to start off by saying, or probably repeating, my appreciation for all that the folks at WMATA are doing with the Abilities Ride program. The program continues to work for me very well. There are lots of people I know who use it, who really do appreciate, you know, the service and whoever and all the folks who were responsible for making that happen. Thank you. So I want to follow up that with a request or a question regarding the funds that are being saved through the Abilities Ride program. Will a report ever be produced that documents the spending on the Abilities Ride and the appropriate comparisons that I think should be made for transparency? The second question I have has to do with the problem of fare evasion on paratransit. Has a report ever been produced documenting the extent of the problem with fare evasion? And like it has been documented many times in the media and talked about at Metro meetings. I'm very curious to find out about that report. The web accessibility, I'm pleased to hear what Mr. Blake just said about making the website more accessible simply by placing links closer to the surface as opposed to being buried in the basement where it's extremely difficult to find. I'm curious, though, as to why it cannot be placed on the main page, since people who use bus rail can book their rides right there on the front page. I don't think there's any reason why we shouldn't be getting that. And finally, I have a question regarding the GPS tracking app for Metro Access vehicles. How soon again will that be coming? Thank you very much.
Mr. Torres,
finished right on time there.
Oh, yes. Mr. Torres, I'm going to add my 2 cents for two of your questions, and I'm going to let Mr. Blake do the rest. So in terms of the fare evasion, because I was personally involved with that. So before Mr. Blake came in with his previous predecessor, I addressed him personally about that issue because it was heavy on Metro Access. And when they put into place the abusive behavior policy about doing that, in terms of Ms. Anderson should be looking at me, warning a customer first about not paying the fare, and then after that suspension, that has significantly helped the issue. Beyond that, I'm going to let Mr. Blake comment on that piece. Go ahead, Mr. Blake.
Yeah, so fare evasion, quite frankly, hasn't been an issue for me. I mean, it's not something I've received a lot of reports about. It's not something that I find to be problematic on Metro Access, because unlike fare evasion on fixed route, I'm gonna say bus or rail, if customer Chris Blake decides to be a fare evader a couple of times, we have ways to deal with Chris Blake. I could go Baltimore on him, or I could just deny him service for a couple of days. I mean, there are ways you really could deal with that particular customer. Fare evasion on the fixed route side is a lot more challenging, a lot more moving parts in that regard. So I think I know where you're going, and I'll address it. I don't want to prejudge your comments, but fare evasion is not an issue for Metro Access, at least not under my tenure, because I'm not a deal with customers. but also just to preempt any other conversation, it's not the reason why we collect fare at the door and not on the vehicle.
That's why I put in my two cents, Mr. Blake.
Yeah, but that's where I have a problem, Mr. Blake, because that is what essentially I was told for the reason for having the policy. Okay, so we're not getting it straight, and this is the concern that I have. You know, you can't tell me, well, the reason why we do this, we really don't want to do this, but we do this because we have a fare evasion problem. But that is deceptive. I don't think it is transparent to say that. I don't think it is right to say that. It is actually deceptive to say that.
Okay, but see, Mr. Torres, again, you gotta keep in mind, I always say, you're looking in the past. You're dealing with Chris Blake. Chris Blake never told you that. I've never said that to anybody in this region. And if you continue to dwell in the past, you're never going to get to the future. Chris Blake says, we're collecting at the door because I think it's a good policy. And as I wrote, different forms of public transportation involve different contact with the driver or operator, or in some cases, no contact at all. I hear what you said. You were told years ago before I showed up. I get that. I'm telling you.
No, Mr. Blake, I heard that from you.
No. You never heard me say I'm collecting fares at the door because of fare evasion. That's just not my, that's not my language. Because I deal with customers. I know how to deal with customers who break my rules. I don't have to do certain things because of a made up problem. But
I'm going to go back because that this came up at a previous meeting, and that was the reason that was given. You know, there was a whole meeting on it. They talked to the advisors and the people advised. Yes. The way we deal with it is to have people pay on the sidewalk. Ms. Rush was involved in that conversation.
Yes,
so
listen
so
to me,
I
Mr.
am.
Torres.
This is news.
No,
this is a news flash.
Listen to me. What you heard was, why was that policy first in place, which occurred before I showed up? What I'm saying to you is that it's a good policy, but it's not for me. It's not based on the original reason it was implemented. It's a good policy because I want the fare collected at the first time that the customer and the driver come in contact.
For what purpose?
Because that is...
What is the justification for it?
The justification is because that is the time of the contact. Just like the first time a person gets in contact with a bus operator is when he or she boards the bus, and that is exactly when they pay. Just like when a person doesn't come in contact with
Mr. Blake, that is not based on anything. That is just based on... That is not based on anything.
Okay.
I mean, that... Okay.
I hear you.
Okay, you know, I'm not going to belabor the point. Other people have to speak, but I have, you know, I had some other questions that
I
asked.
Let me get to your other
point. This is quite a revelation here this evening, and I have to mark this date down because this is a huge reveal.
I think if you look at my email responses to you on this topic, I think they've been very, very consistent. But let me get to a couple other points. You asked about a report in terms of money being saved on Abilities Ride. Is there going to be some kind of report? I don't have any intention to write a report. I think what we're doing is, again, my viewpoint and in fact, how the name even came about. People said Abilities Ride, that's so corny. What is that even about? My belief is where you can, you subsidize people's ability to be independent versus subsidizing their disability and dependency on paratransit service. That's just been my philosophical belief from the time we helped create taxi access in Baltimore and on to the things we've done here in the DC region. I don't believe there's a report needed. I think the signs of savings are our annual actual budget results. And we deal with that with my boss and the board members and the people who finance the service, the jurisdictions. I would just say My focus is less on showing savings, perhaps, and much more on what Dr. Phil Posner and I and Paul spoke about earlier. My focus is on reducing the fare experience of the customers. And that's where I'm at. And as we are reducing our average fare for using Metro Access, and you put on top of that, like I pointed out, nearly a 500,000 free trips on Abilities Ride, that's my focus. That's what I'm promoting. That's what I'm advocating. And that's what I'm going to continue to drive towards, some fare relief for the customers. And I'm very proud of that. And that's going to continue to be my focus. Savings, I'm not sure what the savings are, if you will. We have a budget. That budget is for a safety net to provide customers transportation. And as long as we provide customers with transportation and no one is denied a trip, we're doing our job. So I'm not sure savings is really a focus or priority of mine at this point in time. And then I think you had one more.
The GPS app for
Vehicles. Yes.
I was going to mention, personally, I've advocated for it every single year, especially for, you know, upcoming years. And from what we heard from Miss, our director, is as they're procuring a new system, it will have that, but it will take some time, up to possibly 2 years, to have that in place.
Well, the question I have is 2 years from when? Because I've been hearing 2 years.
I'm gonna let Mr. Blake.
So we don't need. I don't think we need 2 years. We need a date in the future so we can stick to that. Because two years is a slippery slope.
I've advocated for that because I said I use it in New York for their paratransit, and it's a wonderful tool to have.
Mr. Blake. What I want to say is. Yeah, the 2 years is starting to sound like the vehicle will be here in 10 minutes. I mean, it just becomes...
Yeah, there you go. Now you're speaking my language.
Yeah, and so we don't want to go there. And let me tell you, I want this as much as anybody. Trust me, I'm not a customer, but believe you me, I want this. But unlike some people, and I'm not even talking to trans, I'm just talking to Joe. You know how they are in the world. Folks want to be quick to the market and then fix the problems later. I want this to be right from the beginning. And the first test of this, and Paul, you were one of my customers who tried it out, was the imminent arrival calls. Now, how many times did you send me those late night text messages, not to tell me that you appreciate all of my hard work, but to tell me that you were once again awakened in the middle of the night by a faulty imminent arrival call?
Doesn't exist.
Okay, or a trip that didn't even exist. Well, the same system that produced those imminent arrival calls would be the same system that we would be using for our app. Until I can get this fixed, or as Ms. Williams Hall has pointed out, that we may be having a solicitation for possibly a new system or an updated system from the same vendor. What we have right now, I have not been able to test to the level of reliability and quality that I would want from my mom, who was paratransit eligible in another part of this country. So if I wouldn't want it for my mother, I wouldn't want it for you all. Believe me, we're working on some things. We're testing out another imminent arrival feature. It'll be announced soon, but it's a test. And depending on the accuracy and the quality and the reliability of that test, then perhaps we can move to the more mobile, independent app approach. But right now, I don't want to give a date certain because I don't have any control over meeting any date I would give you.
Go ahead.
I have my suspicions about why we're not getting the app, and I don't think it has anything to do with what I'm hearing, because I get the sense that Metro Access does not want to be accountable as to when their vehicles are going to arrive, and that's not right. I don't think they want to be accountable to it, because the thing is that if you call like someone was saying earlier on today, you know, 10 minutes before the end of the window, they're not willing to answer your question on where your vehicle is, right? And it's, you know, and I believe there's a very good reason why they don't want it to happen, because it means that they don't have to act. You see, so you give them this extra, they don't have, but because if they knew that it was not going to be arriving on time, like if I had my GPS app and my ride is actually down in DC and they tell me they're 10 minutes away, they're going to have to act and do something. All right. So anyway.
We got two people. There's two people in the queue. I know, Mr. Blake, I'll let you in, but I need two people to speak before we have 6 minutes.
No problem.
All right, I'll let you end it. So who's next? Anu?
Doris, followed by Darnie's Bush.
Okay, go Doris.
Hello?
Doris, go ahead.
Okay. Thank you. This is just a follow-up to the conversation you were having before you did public comment. But perhaps it is... you were talking about phase two of the Silver Line and the opening of stations in Loudoun County. And I think it will be very important. I work at the Independent Center of North Loudoun County, Fairfax, Arlington.
For
the residents of Loudoun County, we need to have some questions answered about how Metro Access, once it starts riding in Loudoun County, will address the needs of Loudoun County residents. How far away do they have to be from a metro station and or any other bus service? Will people be able finally to get to the subway and get to work in without having to go through complicated transfer from Loudoun vehicle into a metro access vehicle, etc. You know, as this comes forward, hopefully we, ECNV and others in Northern Virginia who are working in Loudoun County can get together with you and put a list of questions answered and starting implementation. I don't know how long down the road that's going to be, but I would like to trust that. And then, secondly, I do want to say, with regard to utilities ride, you know, we in Northern Virginia have not really had a fully implemented utilities ride, and at least that's what my and you know, we're really concerned that we, you know, we're never able to see how it was going to impact us, and believe you me, I have some consumers who are Metro Access users would have benefited greatly. Various, you know, family emergencies.
So we can finish up. I have
one more person to get.
And most of them, and I'll say two more words. Most of them are living in communities. In Chantilly, Centerville, where they might really
service. So let me just
have one
more person. It's 2 minutes. I at least want to get on record so she don't get mad at me.
That's the end.
Yeah. Can I get Darnice to at least say her piece?
Well, I won't issue my complaint. Can you make sure that the new fare boxes, the use of the new fare boxes is included in the trainers? when you do a syllabus for that training.
Okay. You're talking about the Metro bus fare boxes, correct?
Right.
Right. No, I think that's a very fair point. I believe that will be included, but we'll follow up to ensure that.
All right, Mr. Blake, you have it to answer everything.
I want to just say to Doris, there's a couple of things that Doris brought up that's very important. Let's start with abilities ride first, because she's saying that Northern Virginia never really had it. Not true, Doris. Mm-hmm. From July 1st this month until through March, and there's been more, but there have been over 38,000 trips from Virginia or within Virginia on abilities ride. Those are 38,000, and that's just on the taxi company that's based in Virginia. So if you're a Virginia
resident, how many of them, Mr. Blake, were people who live in Virginia?
That's the point I'm getting at to you, Doris. All trips on an Old Dominion have to originate in Virginia. So the likelihood that the vast majority of those trips are the Virginia residents, and there are trips that were on Uber that originate in Virginia that I'm not even counting in that 38,000 figure. And there are trips for people who work or play from Virginia in Washington, D.C. or Maryland, and then they're catching any of the cabs coming back to Virginia are being transported through Abilities Ride as well. So,
let me say that
Virginia is getting a lot of Abilities Ride.
Consumers tell me, Mr. Blake, what I said was my consumers tell me it was never fully implemented.
Not true.
Meaning outside of AAC members or anything like that.
Not true. What never came to Virginia was we began Abilities Ride as a dial-up same-day service in Maryland. So customers in Montgomery County could call Regency, and customers in Prince George's County could call Silver. We then moved Abilities Ride to being a program as it is now, that instead of paying $5 and anything over 20, but you call the taxi company, you book your Metro Access trip. Your Metro Access trip is moved from Metro Access to a taxi. It's free of charge. That has been in Virginia since November of 2019. That's the Abilities Ride program. That's the full implementation of the Abilities Ride program. And when it comes to paratransit in Loudoun County, we are going to have a meeting, but you're not, and Metro Access is going to participate, but Loudoun County wants to provide paratransit for the Loudoun County residents, not Metro Access. So we'll talk more about that as we get closer, but that's really a discussion, and I'll remind the Loudoun County officials that they need to begin to put that message out to their residents and their constituents that their paratransit from Loudoun County to DC and other places will be provided by the county and not Metro Access.
Thank you.
Yeah, I need to know how that's going to be implemented because right now, I mean, up until those stations are out there and they, in quotes, join the system, they have had to go to the border and board a location where they had to go over the border and get a Metro Access ride. So we need to know how that's going to change.
We'll talk about it more at next month's meeting, but also I'm going to reach out in the meantime to see what Loudoun County officials are doing or will be doing to inform the constituents like yourself as to how paratransit is going to work intra-county-wise.
And I'll be happy at the next board meeting to ask Ms. Letourneau what plans are being made. He is the Loudoun County representative to the board, and he is on the board executive committee. And he is
Mr. Letourneau, that's exactly what I was going to ask for, too.
That Loudoun County's contribution to WMATA when the Silver Line opens up, is going to include paying for Metro Access rides unless they provide their own paratransit. So I will be happy to ask him your question, Doris.
We do need to end because the interpreters are going.
Guys, we do need to end. County resident, my tax dollars pay for them.
Guys, we need to end. And it's after 6 o'clock because we are losing our interpreters, and so will Rico. So can I make a motion to adjourn? Thank you for the wonderful, rich discussion.
So moved.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All right, is adjourned.
Have a safe trip home, everybody.